They travel at speeds pushing 200 miles per hour. The very best drivers in the world, putting their lives on the line every week. It's time to get the lowdown on this week's contenders, plus a look at the key driver matchups. Right now, on Gone Racing.
Welcome in, everybody. Brendan Gaughan in studio here with you. Gaughan Racing at the lovely VSiN Studios, South Point Hotel side, not Circa Hotel side. And today I'm all alone in the booth. I got my good friend, Mr. Jeff Motley, is my, of course, our cohort. Jeff, where's Waldo? Where in the world are you today?
I'm up in Sonoma. We're getting ready for a little racing action. Well, I work for both racetracks now, so.
Understood.
I've spent a little bit of time up here. I do still spend most of my time in Las Vegas, though.
What do they got going in Sonoma right now?
NHRA, drag racing.
Oh,
John
okay.
Force, Antron Brown, Tony Schumacher, all the guys.
Very nice, very nice. Well, we had an interesting day at New Hampshire the other day. At one thing, you know, I know we want to talk about the wreck right at the beginning real quick and the rain thing and all, everybody yelling and screaming. But the one thing I want to tell everybody, and I forgot to mention this to you before we talked on air, I had people say, oh, it didn't look that dark. It wasn't that bad. They should have kept going. The cameras that we use, guys, these cameras that TV people have, they're amazing. They have what's called an iris. Do you know how dark it was when they finished that race?
Right. People have to realize when you pretend it's an hour later, basically, is about what the iris does. It gives you an extra hour of daylight on the camera.
Yeah, I mean, I watched saw some pictures from Victory Lane and stuff like that. And you could see how dark it was in pictures. So for the folks at home, they ended the race. So if you didn't know, NASCAR, of course, called the race about 9 laps short last week at New Hampshire for darkness because the rain came early. But it didn't look that dark on television. I've been at New Hampshire when we were battling darkness in a truck race back in 2004. And I remember that Bill Lester's truck, the Red Dodge, wrecked out of turn 4 and was on the racetrack side of the entrance of pit road for 2 laps before anybody saw the truck sitting there. And it was like, oh, goodness gracious. So it gets dark. NASCAR did the right thing. And we got a surprise winner. But you can go back now and talk about your start with Kyle Busch and the dueling spins at the start of the race.
Yeah, you know, my issue with that is, you know, you had Truex and Kyle Busch both coming on the radio 3 laps in saying, hey, look, it's really raining out here. Then on lap 4, it said, look, it's pouring down out here. And they're both letting off the accelerator early. Now, I understand if Kyle Busch is leading the race with 15 laps to go and he says it's raining, that you don't listen to him. But if you're 3 or 4 laps into a 301-lap race and you got your 2 drivers that are running out front that are taking on the brunt of the weather and they're saying, look, it's raining out here, listen to your drivers because they're closer to the racetrack and have a better feel for what's going on than anybody else.
Now, I'm going to stick up for NASCAR here. And I don't normally do that, so this I know I'm taking the opposite side of something for a change. They have spotters. We say it. We go, we're okay. And you're right. The steering wheel's in our hand. We can slow down earlier if we need to. And New Hampshire's not normally a place, Jeff. When you go to Michigan, you go to Talladega, sometimes there's a huge storm over in turn 3. The rest of the track's perfectly dry, and there's a storm over here. This was different where New Hampshire is such a small track, you didn't expect turn 1 to be so bad if turn 3 wasn't as bad. So it definitely was unusual, and NASCAR kind of said they were ready to throw that caution flag. They said that they had the flagman with the caution flag in his hand getting ready to throw it when, of course, the caution came out. So kind of a bummer for Kyle because he'd been on such a great streak lately. Martin Truex Jr. had a decent comeback for a 12th-place finish, so not terrible, but it still got a little egg on NASCAR's face. But in the end, great race.
And the good thing is the two guys whose day was essentially ruined, they're both in the playoffs anyway. I mean, I don't want to diminish the fact there was an important race for them, but at least it did not cost, say, Austin Dillon or Tyler Reddick or somebody that's sitting there on the bubble an opportunity to qualify for the playoffs.
No, that's a very, very good point. That it wasn't like Matt DiBenedetto had got the pole and was out there in the lead, and then that happened. It was two guys solidly in the playoffs, not in fear of anything. Now, it's still, you know, Kyle was hot, and he had right to be hot. But
and if you were a better and you had Kyle Busch, you were real happy about it.
Oh, yeah. No. I know there are some bettors around all over the place screaming and yelling when those two. I mean, but it was so much fun to watch. I mean, you watch those two go right into turn one, slip and slide, and then the whole field goes, oh, hey, look, I think it's wet over there. Let's slow down. So that was amusing.
And we do have the Olympics, synchronized wrecking.
Olympic time, perfect. All right, everybody, welcome into Gone Racing. Brendan Gaughan in studio with you, Mr. Jeff Motley at his second home out at Sonoma Raceway. And Motley, we don't have a race this weekend because the Olympic break, like you mentioned. So this is going to be a little bit of a different show. We're going to kind of break down a lot of the stuff that's been happening this year, some of the things that affected the bettors this year, and just kind of give you a recap and, you know, have a little fun today since this is kind of our loose fun show. But let's start off with a big effect for the bettors. Long shots have absolutely dominated the race wins this season.
Well, they certainly did early on. I mean, you got two huge long shots with Michael McDowell and Christopher Bell winning the first two races. You know, and I think it's interesting because you see how the odds morph as the season goes along. You know, William Byron winning in Homestead at 28-1. Well, guess what? You're not going to get William Byron at
28-1
the rest of the way. And I think William Byron was one of those guys that you and I said at the beginning of the year, watch out. This is a guy who could make the biggest leap forward. Even Kyle Larson was a double-digit favorite when he won in Las Vegas. You think you're going to get Kyle Larson in double digits at any mile and a half track on the schedule the rest of the year?
You're not going to get double digits for the championship. I mean, that's how paltry he is. But you're right. Is we talk about futures, and we're going to talk about that later about championship odds. But guys like William Byron and those wins, guys like Kyle Larson, Martin Truex Jr. These are guys that this week Eric Almirola, which isn't even on this win sheet. I mean, you had 66-1 with McDowell at Daytona. Chris Froome was 80-1. William Byron was 28. Larson was 10. Truex was 11. Blaney was 20, Logano 33. Those are just seven of the examples, and it doesn't even include what happened this weekend at New Hampshire, where another high, I think he was 60 or 80-1, won this race. So, I mean, a lot of huge returns for bettors if you were willing to lay that risk and throw out that shot of, hey, I think that, you know, this guy's going to have a good week this week. You're going to make a lot of money on those guys, and the bettors have been reaping the benefits of it if you took the chance.
Well, and I completely agree with you. You know, until Eric Almirola won this past weekend or last weekend in New Hampshire, I thought the biggest upset of the year in terms of winning, it was not to me Michael McDowell or Christopher Bell. I thought it was Joey Logano winning on a dirt track. I think we had so fixed in on Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Chase Elliott, Austin Dillon, guys that had this experience on dirt tracks that had won in other series on dirt. Joey Logano had never really even raced on dirt until the weekend before when he ran like a late model race there at Bristol. And for him to come out and not only win but to dominate, I really thought that was the biggest upset of the season until Almirola won at New Hampshire.
I think I'd argue that you are exactly right because Michael McDowell's win at Daytona was not as big of an upset as Joey Logano's win at Bristol. Matter of fact, I remember that show. We both kind of laughed because we talked about, like, Logano at 33-1. Was he worth it? I'm like, hell no, he's not worth it. Logano's never touched dirt. And so that to me was probably one of the bigger shocks at the start of the season.
Right. And I think one of the things we got to go back and look at the start, you know, Michael McDowell and Christopher Bell won those first two races. Well, until New Hampshire, Christopher Bell really had not followed up his win really with that many strong runs. And Michael McDowell hasn't really followed up his win, which is part of the reason why, even though they each have a win, they're at the bottom of the playoff standings among those that have already qualified.
Yeah, and they're there, which, remember, this format, when you're in, unless we get 17 winners, which could still happen. Let's also talk about the really cool, the start of the season, and you know, I love that Karina and Ann and Isaiah and all them, variety is the spice of life. At the start of this season, we had seven races with seven different winners, which had me, Jeff, on the huge end of me every week telling you we can get 16, 17 different winners. We had 10 winners in 11 races, and that was the first time in 2000, 10 winners in 10 races, and in 2003, 9 winners in 10 races. So that's, you know, kind of a record for variety in NASCAR. The first four winners of the season, McDowell, Bell, Byron, Larson. Larson, remember, asterisk, didn't get to race full-time in 2020. They combined for one win last season. That would be Byron, who won one race the season before. And none of them were better than 14th in points. I didn't realize that Byron dropped out of the playoffs that quickly. First time since 1988 that the first four winners, I lost my place, the first four winners of the season each had fewer than 10 career wins at the time of their victory. So that's actually kind of a cool stat. 1986, that's kind of a cool stat if you really look at that, that it basically means that fresh faces are coming into this sport. And the first two races were the first time wins, with Bell and McDowell each getting their first career win. The only other time in history that happened was 1949 and 1950, which would be the first 2 years of NASCAR. So that's a hell of a stat right there, Motley. But the start of the season was amazing with the people. You remember how we were talking? I mean, I was telling you 16 winners. I thought we were going to get to 16, 17 winners regular season. And we were saying, man, Michael McDowell, would that suck if Michael McDowell misses the playoffs because he won Daytona and too many people won a race?
Well, no, you're right. And look, you said mathematically, we could still, get there.
We can. You're saying there's a chance.
Right. But in 16 winners, Michael McDowell is going to make the playoffs. It's 17 winners is when he might get nervous. But
well, actually, he's not nervous.
Christopher Bell's in worse shape than
Eric Almirola is the one that's in the worst shape.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Eric Almirola, because he hasn't really – you can't say he's clinched a playoff berth yet.
27th in points before he got his win.
Well, and here's the other thing with Almirola. And honestly, I really – and I should have gone and looked back at this. He has to stay in the top 30 in points. He goes and blows an engine 2 or 3 weeks in a row and drops out of the top 30. His win does not qualify him.
Yeah,
so he still must be in the top 30.
Hold on. That to me is less likely than 17 winners. I mean, you're saying there's a chance, but you're looking at those guys back there. That's a long time.
You know, Brennan, I think one of the other things the early part of the season, though, really showed us, and it was a topic that you and I talked about before the season began. We all knew what a great race car driver Kyle Larson was.
Yes.
We did not know, number one, how would the year off affect him from the NASCAR side of things. But the other thing we didn't know is how was he going to morph into the Hendrick team? I mean, we thought you put Kyle Larson in a Hendrick car, this is going to be really good. Well, he comes out and he wins in Las Vegas in dominating fashion. And look, let's face it, he should have won at Homestead, Miami. He should have won at Darlington. The number of races he has left on the table.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle Larson really, really showed during that early stretch, even though he only won one of them, that he was going to be the guy to beat. And that's a reason that he's the favorite for the championship right now.
Absolutely. Now, after that amazing streak to start the season with all those great stats, then we got back to, okay, here comes some of the old guard. Martin Truex Jr., of course, after 7 races, became the first repeat winner. So he did that. And then you ended up getting, a couple more unfamiliar. Alex Bowman in there, which was another double digit that we kind of were surprised of. But then you had Brad Kay win a super speedway, which we kind of thought. Kyle Busch finally off the schneid at Kansas. But look, that was a 12-1 shot for Kyle Busch. So the betters this year, I think what this was showing at the start of the season is, and we said it, the chalk was not winning every week. The chalk was not the way to go. You look at these numbers, you know, Alex Bowman 33, Brad Keselowski 11, Kyle Busch 12. We're naming all these races that they were not chalk, and they were getting new big returns on those wins again.
No, you're exactly right. But I also think sometimes when we see the lines that are made for the first 7 to 10 races of the year, there's so much that gets based off of the previous year. And let's face it, most every race we went into early in the season, with maybe the exception of the road courses, who are our favorites? Denny Hamlin and Kevin Harvick. Because Denny Hamlin and Kevin Harvick were the guy that won the most races last year. Even though we know Chase Elliott was the champion, Harvick and Hamlin seemed to be the guys to beat every week until they got to Phoenix, and of course Harvick didn't make it there. So I think we had so much favoritism going on with Hamlin and Harvick that some of these other guys got forgotten, like Brad Keselowski and like Kyle Busch and folks like that. And what we've really found this year is Hamlin and Harvick, even though Hamlin's got the most points of any driver out there, he's still yet to find victory lane. So no one's cashed a big ticket yet on Denny Hamlin.
Well, and that talks about the streaks that we've had, because even though we had all these different winners, we've had a lot of streaks. You know, Truex was the first repeat winner of the season, just said that. Truex also won 3 of the last 4 races at Martinsville, which is implications because it's in the playoffs.
Does that make that his new home track?
Absolutely. It's east of the Mississippi. So, I mean, you know, that That sits in there.
East of Mississippi, north of Florida.
I think he even has a home track in Homestead. Sure. Bowman, who was 10 laps led in Richmond, was the second fewest in ever. Kevin Harvick led three in 2013. Denny Hamlin, though, let's talk about that streak. 8 top five finishes in the opening 9 races. That was an all-time record for top fives to start a season without a win. And Hamlin, as you pointed out, was still winless. And then William Byron with that streak. Remember that streak William Byron was on? 11 straight top 10 finishes. It's the fourth longest in history behind all Hendrick drivers. Jeff Gordon had 21 and 14. Jimmy Johnson had 13. Rick Hendrick owns the 4 longest top 10 streaks in NASCAR history. And that was by Byron. He was on fire for a little while there.
And I still think Byron is one of those guys, as we get closer to the playoffs, I still think he's going to be one of those guys that it would not shock me if he actually made it to Phoenix to the final race. I mean, he's so consistent. He stays out of trouble now. I mean, his problems really that's affected him, with the exception of one bad run, he's had some pit issues, or he's had to start at the rear of the field and gotten himself caught up in a mess because of something at an inspection. I mean, he's had weird things happen to him the last few weeks.
Yeah, no, that was impressive. And then let's do talk about Kyle Larson a little bit. Let's focus in on Kyle now. We've kind of been all around the board. If you're a better, you got to look at this Kyle Larson thing. We said futures, Jeff. Bet on Kyle Larson start of the season for the NASCAR championship because the number was going to go down. Wait till we tell you the number later today. But let's talk about the dominant runs that he had this year. You know, Darlington, Dover. Now, these are, sorry, Kyle Larson's runs were 3 straight runner-up finishes. So okay, remember, he had the 3 straight seconds.
He dominated Darlington.
And he didn't win. Then he dominated Dover and didn't win. And then he was the fastest thing at COTA and didn't win. So he finished second, second, second. Then he comes off and runs Charlotte, Sonoma, the All-Star race, which didn't count, as far as official. But then Nashville, and just flat out stomped everybody in the mud hole. That was 7 straight races, 6 if you don't count the All-Star race, but 7 if you count the All-Star race, that he flat out just put it on everybody. I mean, absolutely destroyed the field and made himself the most valuable property in NASCAR today.
And I think maybe the biggest surprise of all of it was seeing how well he ran in Austin at the Circuit of the Americas and the way he really dominated the race at Sonoma. I mean, he started on the pole, but because of pit strategy, he would be back in 12th, 14th place, would work his way back up to the lead. And that's not something we had really seen a lot of out of Kyle Larson in his career, was him having great road course prowess. Now we know there's 2 road course races remaining in the regular season. Plus, we have the Roval in Charlotte in the playoffs. And the fact that Kyle Larson is very comfortable now in these road courses, I think makes him an even bigger threat. Because, hey, what's going on the next 4 weeks for Kyle Larson? It's all about padding those playoff numbers so that you've got a little bit of a cushion as you start working your way through these 3 race segments when the playoffs start.
You just said Roval. You know how I feel about that.
It's what they're calling it.
It's the Charlotte road course.
Look, I had to say the Bushy McBush face 400
yes!
or whatever it was.
Bushy McBush makes another comeback. Never thought we'd have to say it again, yet we snuck it in there. Way to go. Way to go, Motley. Yes, we all know how I feel about Roval. Something new. Listen, I love Marcus Smith. You know I love Marcus. You know I love Brute. You know I love your team at SMI. It wasn't new. They've been doing it at Daytona for 50 years.
Not for NASCAR, though.
I'm just saying it wasn't new. It's not a Roval at Daytona. It's the Daytona International Speedway road course. Let me get off of that then. Now, we also had what was going to be our first ever doubleheader in NASCAR history, but of course, because of the pandemic, it ended up not being it. But Pocono had their amazing doubleheader. 5 races, 2 days, absolutely amazing racing. Once again, Kyle Larson, one corner from winning the race and doesn't win, gives Alex Bowman another double-digit winner. And 18-1. And then Kyle Busch followed up my theory at Pocono with the, if he races Saturday or, Friday or Saturday, has a good day, Kyle Busch comes home winner on the second day. That was an awesome doubleheader day right there. I mean, I that was a great weekend, Jeff.
Well, and don't forget the fact that Kyle Larson, because he crashed out on Saturday, had to start dead last on Sunday, got into a couple of, bumper-to-bumper bang-ups early in the race, and he fought his way all the way back and finished second in the race on Sunday. So just another example of the strength of Kyle Larson this year.
Kyle Larson been amazing. Then we went to, of course, Road America. Chase Elliott proving once again why he is the road course master in our series right now. Just unbelievable. But then a huge, another double-digit Kurt Busch with a dominant win that was the last two winners, Jeff, really have come out of left field to me. Kurt Busch at 30-1, Eric Almirola 80-1. Just really cannot believe those two wins right now. I mean, you and I were pretty confident that we had 11, 12 winners. You know, man, this thing jumped up in a hurry where you got Kurt and Eric back to back. Huge odds on those guys.
Yeah, you know, I don't think Kurt winning was necessarily a humongous shock. It was certainly a surprise. Eric Almirola winning at New Hampshire, I think, was a shock. But, Brendan, the thing that blew me away about both of those races, neither one of those guys won because of fuel mileage.
Yeah, no strategy. No strategy.
Somebody screwed up late. They both were clearly the best car on the racetrack all day long. And they were the deserving driver to win the race. They didn't back into those wins.
No, and that was I think, as you said, they weren't dominant guys all year long, and now all of a sudden they're dominant guys. So that was a huge, huge deal to see them do that. But Eric Almirola even more so, because Stuart Haas has flat-out struggled. That's the first win for Stuart Haas this year. I mean, did you expect it to be Eric Almirola?
Nobody did.
All right, well, when we come back, we're going to give you more storylines can, you know, is that anybody can get a catch up in the playoffs? We'll talk about it when we return on Gone Racing. Welcome back in, everybody. Brendan Gaughan Racing, VSiN Studio here, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Mr. Jeff Motley hanging out in Sonoma. Jeff, let's talk about some of our season storylines. We've kind of broke down the whole first half of the season, how many huge double-digit winners we've had, how many surprising winners, how many just such an amazing thing. But even in the middle of all that, some of the storylines have been about domination. And first, Hendrick. Hendrick Motorsports is absolutely the Hendrick Motorsports of old, or maybe even the Hendrick Motorsports of never has been. They are absolutely unreal right now. 10 wins this season, first double-digit win season since 2014, which is when, you know, Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon were flat out the dynamic duo. And they have 18 wins, and then Hendrick back in 07 had 18 wins. Once again, dynamic duo, and you mixed in, I think, a win by Casey Mears in there or something like that. But all four drivers this season, Larson, Elliott, Byron, Bowman, all have won. Bowman has won multiple times. They had the second time ever, or the fourth time ever, a 1-2-3-4 finish when they did it at Dover. Bowman first, Larson second, Elliott third, Byron fourth. It was the fourth 1-2-3-4 finish for a team in the Cup Series history. But the better part is they almost backed it up the next week with another 1-2-3-4 finish. I think it was 1-2-4-5 the next week, Jeff. Hendrick, I don't know if we've ever seen, and Hendrick has dominated. I don't think we've ever seen it this stout from top to bottom.
I hate to go to the point and say never, because I definitely do look back at the Hendrick teams when they had Jimmy, Jeff, Dale Jr., and Casey Kane. You know, that was a pretty, pretty strong team.
Yeah, but Jr. had some of those years with no wins, and these guys are killing it.
These guys are killing it right now. I mean, we haven't seen quite the Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon domination, although Kyle Larson might be getting close. I think it's going to be really curious to see how we progress through the remainder of the season. I do believe, knowing Chase Elliott's propensity on the road courses, and if there's three road courses left, knowing how well Kyle Larson runs on the mile and a half, so we've got several of those type tracks left. And look, Alex Bowman and William Byron, we know they're going to be consistent everywhere they go. There's not a race left on the schedule that I would discount the Hendrick cars from winning.
Well, and Kyle Busch, he had his 17th consecutive season with a win. And that ties David Pearson for the second longest. Richard Petty, of course, has the longest, 18 years. Go figure.
But that's the thing. Richard Petty's is 18 years. Kyle Busch is one season away from tying a record set by Richard Petty.
If you can tie anything by Richard Petty, you have definitely done something there.
Absolutely.
And Brad Keselowski, he won Talladega, led the last lap, you know, tight finish there. It was awesome. That was his sixth career win with a last lap pass. Brad is Mr. Clutch, apparently. And it's the third time Keselowski won a race by leading an only the last lap, which is pretty cool. No driver's ever done that more than once. So that was kind of cool. Those are kind of some of the quick storylines of this season, which I think were fun to follow as far as fun storylines there. But now let's talk about the fight to the finish. How many guys are trying to battle for this spot, Jeff? We're really tight right here. I mean, if you look at this, yes, the gap is big as far as after Tyler Reddick, but you got two guys, two RCR teammates, Tyler Reddick and just outside of this, we're not showing it on the screen if you're watching on the VSiN feed, Austin Dillon, he's 6 points behind Tyler for that last place playoff position. Another upset winner at Daytona, and guess what? Both RCR cars are out.
Then Kevin Harvick is on the bubble.
So, I mean, you look at these guys. Can any of these guys make it on point? Do you think anybody can point their way back in? Or is this, other than Austin and Tyler, of course, those two are in a point battle. Other than that, can anybody point their way in or out?
No. No question. No one else is going to point their way in. Brendan, you remember the old Goody's Headache Award they used to give out after every race? I thought at New Hampshire, after Almirola won that race, I would have given the Goody's Headache Award to Dillon. Richard Childress.
Richard Childress.
Now Richard was sitting there, man, I got both my guys 100 points clear, and we're going to New Hampshire. New Hampshire's going to be won by Kyle Busch or
Martin
Truex.
Yeah.
He was not expecting Almirola. I think the race that these guys were all nervous about was Daytona. But I think when we see what Almirola did at New Hampshire, guess what? I'd get nervous about all four of the remaining races. You can't tell me that Matt Benedetto is not capable of winning one of these races, or Daniel Suarez or Bubba Wallace comes out of nowhere. We know Bubba can win at Daytona. The guy runs up front at Daytona and Talladega every time he goes there.
No, and like you said, you got two road courses where Suarez is pretty good. You got Daytona, of course. You got these things right now. If I'm Kevin Harvick, even I'm still a little nervous, because if you get one guy win a road course and then you end up with Daytona being the cutoff race and there's Bubba Wallace being pushed, I'd be nervous if I'm Kevin, because it could come down to that last race. All right, guys, when we come back, we're going to give you some of the championship odds and how we talk about futures at the beginning of the season. Everybody, Brendan Gaughan, welcome back into Gaughan Racing. Mr. Jeff Motley, we're running out of races here to make the playoffs. We just talked about who's out, who's in, and you look at the races coming up. Of course, we got road course with Watkins Glen, one of our most famous ones on the NASCAR schedule, and then the inaugural Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course race, which I think is going to be a fun one to watch personally. And then you end up with Michigan. The old school, everybody wants to win Michigan because that's where the big three, you know, their headquarters are. And then, of course, your favorite word, the crapshoot at Daytona before you start the playoffs at Darlington. This is a very unique part of the schedule here. You know, two road courses, a 2 mile, and then, of course, the super speedway. This is going to be a lot of fun down this stretch.
Oh, I think it's going to be tremendous. I think, obviously, like we were talking in the previous segment, there's going to be some nervous drivers and some nervous co-owners owners that don't have wins that are at the bottom of the top 16 right now. Obviously, I think we go into these next two races and we think that they're, you know, Chase Elliott is going to be the guy to beat. And look, if you're Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, you're some of these guys, this is the spot to go and make hay to get those playoff
pad
points.
Pad the points, baby.
Right, because that's something that people have to remember. It really cost Kevin Harvick a chance to get to the final race at Phoenix last year because he had not compiled enough playoff points throughout the regular season. That's all you're thinking about right now if you're Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott and Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Busch, and all those guys.
And, Jeff, how many points did Kevin Harvick miss the championship round by?
one position. He tried to wreck Kyle Busch on the last lap at Martinsville to get there.
1 point.
One position.
That means one stage win. You know, that means one more race win. That means 1 point. So don't tell me those things don't matter. We're sitting here in August saying, oh, that doesn't. No, those matter. They make a difference. So you're right. Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson proved me wrong this year. I said at Sonoma, okay, look, nobody can win stages and win the race. You know, you got to play the game. Then Kyle Larson goes out and wins stage one, wins stage two, and wins the race. So that theory is out the door now, been proven that when you're that strong as those two guys. So that could be a lot of fun.
Now, one thing about those road courses, though, with that, and you know, Brendan, is the length of the
course.
Stage,
yeah.
Length of the course. Sonoma probably sets up a little bit better to do that. I don't think you're going to be able to do that at Indianapolis. But I think you could potentially do that at Watkins Glen. But the length of the course at Indianapolis is probably going to make that a little tougher.
The Glen you could. I think, but I do agree with you. Indianapolis will be its a unique challenge. It's another Roval, Motley.
Well, if the Xfinity race there last year was any indication, it ought to be amazing.
You don't want to call it the Indianapolis Roval, Jeff?
No, we've got one Roval.
But it's the same thing. It's inside an oval track and uses part of the oval. Why don't you call it a Roval?
But Charlotte has actually trademarked the name Roval. It is the Roval. The name of the course.
Sorry. Let's get off the Roval talk before I get Motley fired before the Smith family calls him and says, what's this guy doing with you? Let's talk about the championship odds right now. This is where we're still a betting show. Let's talk about the championship odds. But remember what we talked at the start of the season? I said this, and Jeff, you and I say this all the time if we're talking futures. When you bet a future bet is just as important as who you bet in the future. And when the odds started this season, you and I circled one guy and said, holy cow, holy cow, holy cow, that's the guy that I'm going to bet on right now. And that is Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson, right before Daytona, was plus 575 to win the championship. He's now the favorite at plus 280.
It's a great number on Kyle Larson. But, Brendan, if you'll also remember, we decided we were also going to say, who would be your long shot guy? And I want to say that the guy that I think you and I both agreed on as a great long shot guy before the Daytona 500 was 47-1.
Yep.
And he's sitting down there at 12-1 right now, and that's William Byron. So I think that those are certainly some guys. And, you know, Alex Bowman's numbers also have dropped dramatically. But you mentioned Larson. His odds are almost cut. I guess they are cut in half from what they were before Daytona. William Byron's have been cut by 3/4. I mean, completely chopped up since Daytona.
No, and if you look, I was not as high as on Alex Bowman at the start of the season as I was William. Now they're about equal in my eyes. They both have proven they can flat out, you know, play in this game at that level, in that, you know, and be relevant every week. But you look at those two numbers. Bowman went from 24-14. William went from 47-12. And those are guys that, hey, look, that was your time to bet them at 47-24. Now they're still 12-14. I would tell you right now, it is still time to jump on a William Byron and Alex Bowman bandwagon. Now, you're not going to get them at 47-24, but 12-14 is pretty darn good. When I think I'm going to see them single digits after the playoffs start, maybe in that second round, they're going to be down in that plus 800, plus 600 range. You're still getting a good odd on those two guys.
No, you absolutely are. But I'll tell you, once the playoffs start, guess what? Other than maybe going after Eric Almirola or Kurt Busch or Michael McDowell, Christopher Bell, once these playoffs get started, and especially once we finish Bristol and we whack it down to 12, it's too late to bet the championship.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you're looking for good numbers, you got to jump on them now. And here's one that's gone the opposite way that I think, even though hasn't been running great, but Kevin Harvick started the season at plus 575. He was the early season favorite to win the championship, has now gone all the way down up to 12-1. I don't see Kevin Harvick making this whole season without winning. And I don't see Kevin Harvick making this whole season with not being a contender down the stretch. I think that's a great number for Kevin, once again, to jump on now while it's still high, because as the playoffs go, that's going to diminish.
Well, and Kevin is one of those guys who is – he may have to win just to get into the final eight. I mean, I think he can point himself into the final eight. I think he will figure out how to do that. But – to get any farther, I think he's going to have to win. I don't believe there's going to be any pointing his way any farther than that.
No, I mean, he definitely ain't going to be able to point his way into the fourth round with the number of bonus points that the, well, you say that, and then look what happened, you know, in the past. I like some of these things. And if I go down to the second page of our championship odds, there's some guys that are kind of unique in there. Tyler Reddick, is he in our conversation or not that he can maybe run for the championship? He's gone from 98 to 1 to 60 to 1. And Austin Dillon's gone the opposite way, even though they're running about the same. Austin Dillon's gone from 75 to 80. So I don't know. There, you know, Matt DiBenedetto is definitely not. He was 62 to 1 start the year, 100 to 1 now. I don't know. Your guy Kurt Busch just dropped a few points. He's down to 25 to 1. There's some intriguing numbers on the second page, but there's guys I like on the first page that are even more of a favorite.
Yeah, I would agree. I think probably of all the ones on what we would call our quote-unquote second page, Kurt's probably the guy because he is a former champion and kind of knows what it takes. But, boy, it's going to be hard to come off that second page given the playoff bonus point structure.
Unless you get hot, baby. Remember, you win, you advance to the next round. So that's the important thing there. If you win, you're back. So everybody remember that. Don't forget.
Which Kurt did in Vegas, remember?
Yes, he did. All right, guys, we're going to come back, finish up the show, and tell you where everybody's at next year. Talk to you soon. Want to rewatch any part of today's show or any past show? Check us out at VSiN.com/subscribe. There are also multiple other ways for you to watch. VSiN's available on Fubo and Sling. They've partnered with iHeartMedia. You can also access VSiN on all your Alexa devices. For all the ways to watch and listen, go to VSiN.com/subscribe today. All right, everybody, welcome back in. Brennan gone, Jeff Motley gone racing. Not really a race to preview, so we're with the Olympic break. So we're kind of going through some of the stuff this year that the bettors have seen and some of the deals. And the last thing we really need to talk about, which is it's a big news because it's going to shake up a lot of things next year when you go to make your bet. You're going to be betting, you know, Brad Keselowski will not be at Penske Racing next year when you talk about, you know, betting on a team to win. You better get that straight when you're trying to put places and faces. And, let's start off with the new same faces in different places next year. A lot of news so far this week, Motley. Brad Keselowski, of course, I think the biggest news. I mean, no shocker. I think we all have. That was the worst-kept secret.
Worst-kept secret.
Yeah. He is going to Roush Fenway, Keselowski Racing, as a driver and ownership role. Kurt Busch, not sure what he's doing yet. He's still rumored in 23X1. Ross Chastain. Not sure what he's going to do next year. He's in, you know, a candidate for that second seat at the old Ganassi Racing. Matty D's out of Penske. Newman is out at Roush because Brad Keselowski's already been announced over there. Ryan Preece, we know that combo is up in the air. But there's a lot of new teams that are coming next year that has a lot of these people looking for seats. You've got Colleague Racing, which has a brand new race team that's coming. GMS is coming with new cup teams. 23X1 is adding, you know, a team next year, rumored to be adding a team next year. So there are a lot of stuff happening in the NASCAR world where, you know, what team you bet on next year is going to be a whole lot tougher than this year where, you know, Hendrick is plus 180 every week.
Well, you're right. And I think probably the biggest change or the newness we're going to see for next year is what we're going to see with the Penske organization, with Austin Cindric coming in, replacing Brad Keselowski, and seeing Harrison Burton move over into the Wood Brothers car that we know is really kind of like a fourth Penske car, replacing Matt DiBenedetto. So I think that's probably the biggest new faces that we're going to see. Obviously, Justin Haley is going to come in and be the full-time driver for Colleague Racing. They're probably going to run a part-time team with AJ Allmendinger in a second car. I think Allmendinger is going to have a little bit more interest in that in that organization. You mentioned Maury Gallagher's GMS team. We don't really know exactly if they're going to even run full time, but we know there's a big push on for charters. We also know that Trackhouse Racing, Daniel Suarez, is going to have a teammate since they bought the charters from Chip Ganassi. So there's certainly going to be a lot of changing, a lot of new faces, and that's kind of what makes it exciting every year, you know, is to see who's different. And Brendan, maybe the biggest change of all is going to be the new car in 2022.
Well, and the new car is a huge, that's why all this stuff's happening bigger than normal right now. This new car, a lot of ownership here. You know, those charters you talked about, Jeff, we've all heard rumors. Over $10 million is what we've heard is the rumor that the going price for a charter was right now. It's rumored, but listen, that if that is true, then that means NASCAR, kudos to them for inventing the charter system. You now gave owners a value, which is what they were looking for. I've not been a big fan of the charter system, but if that is true, then NASCAR truly came up with something that gave value to a team owner, and kudos to them on that. And this next part is the next-gen car. It's designed to be more cost-effective. Let's put an asterisk there. It will not be next year, of course, with everything, you know, a lot of money to change them over. They say it's supposed to be safer. I've seen some of the pictures. I've seen some of the videos. A lot of crushable impact, a lot of things like that, which for me in the seat, I like that. The other thing the manufacturers liked, it's much more like the race on Sunday, sell on Monday cars, right? It's supposed to be looking like the manufacturer. The Toyota looks like a Toyota. The Ford looks like a Ford. The Chevy looks like a Chevy. And I've heard that there are two manufacturers that are really in talks to come into the sport in the next 3 years because of this car. And it's supposed to make the racing better. Now, I think we've seen some great racing. If this can improve it even more, Jeff, then it's going to be a W for this new car.
I agree. I think it's fantastic. I think probably the hardest part is going to be that these teams are not going to be manufacturing many of their own parts anymore. There's parts suppliers for almost every part of the car. That's obviously going to, you know, that's going to create a little bit of, I guess, recession within the teams, because obviously they won't need as many employees, but it's certainly going to make the cars hopefully more equal, and it's going to level the playing field for the teams that come in, like Colleg Racing, like Trackhouse Racing, to be able to compete with Hendrick and Gibbs and those other teams when they get there.
See, now I disagree with some of those statements, but we'll see how it goes in the end on this. But it is definitely a bonus what we have going on with this new car. And let's talk about some of the new things. It's more symmetrical. So now this may sound kind of funny. Everybody going, what the hell? What do you mean more symmetrical? It's a car. Look, I've been in this sport, Jeff, a long time. I remember when the left front fender at Martinsville went from this big. Let me get the camera. There we go. Went from this big to you go to Michigan the next week and it was this big, but it still fit the same templates. So that was the fun part.
Well, keep in mind, the teams are only going to be allowed to have 7 chassis per car number at any one time.
Yeah.
If a chassis gets destroyed, then they can purchase a new one. But NASCAR is going to control. So you're not going to have these race shops anymore that have 14, 15 cars sitting around them where, oh, this is my Daytona car, and this is my Watkins Glen car.
Yep, no,
you're going to pretty much run the same car everywhere.
And for the symmetrical side, guys, you hear us say the word crab, you know, it's crabbing down the straightaway, it's dog walking, where you watch us at Michigan and the cars are, they're really bent up, and then you watch it at Daytona and it's straight. It's changed. So those are things that the symmetrical means, where you're not going to have all those goofy looking cars going down the racetrack. Another huge thing is the independent rear suspension. So that some people may say, well, I don't get it. If you own a truck, you have a big 9-inch rear end in there, right? That's a big solid axle. That's what NASCAR has. But if you own a Ford, a Chevy, or a Toyota Camry, Mustang, it does not have that in the rear end. It has an independent rear suspension. This car is going to go match the manufacturer's version much better, Jeff, and that is supposed to help for racing. You're going to have more tunability, but it also helps manufacturers say we're racing what we have on the street.
Well, and I think that was an important part for the manufacturers. I mean, it goes back to what you said earlier, win on Sunday and sell on Monday. And I think that's their whole idea again.
Now, the next two things have been the most controversial. The 18-inch wheel and the center lug nut. Now, listen, people. This is not going to go to IndyCar or Formula One where, you know, they have 2-second pit stops. One lug nut is safer. Now, of course, this year in the Indy 500, we had a guy leave the pits without a lug nut on and the wheel comes off.
You had one job for one piece of equipment.
Lewis, you had one job. And so, but the 18-inch wheel, what that's going to do is it's going to stop this whole PJ1 conversation. You're going to now have more tire patch. You can make a softer tire because there's less sidewall. Goodyear can go back and be a factor instead of making these hockey pucks for tires that have to live forever. And you can make the racing better all because that tire. To me, that solves a huge problem. And the center lug nut will not be as controversial, guys, because it's just going to be one lug nut. It's still going to have a guy carrying a tire, Jackman, all the stuff you see. It's just going to be a lot easier to do that.
You know, my concern there is for the NASCAR Foundation, because I think all the fines to the crew chiefs for loose lug nuts,
they're going to lose a lot of money.
Foundation. So when the NASCAR Foundation comes up about $500,000 short of their goal next year, it's going to be because they got rid of lug nuts.
That's really funny right there, actually. And the fine's going to be big if you lose the one. So I wouldn't do it. A transaxle.
Yeah, I don't know what that'll be.
The transaxle basically goes along with the independent rear suspension. It basically now there's no rear end like you're used to seeing in them. Now it's the transmission, the gear, it's all one. It's got wishbone. That one's little deep into the weeds there. We'll leave that one alone. The drivers are positioned even closer to the center of the car. Of course, the new car, we were moved in a little bit. Going back 10 years, 11 years, Jeff. But now we're even further into the center of the car, which is another safety feature for the driver.
Yeah. I guess if you get T-boned, it's a safer thing. To me, that's going to look a little funny. I'm just waiting to see how far has the guy got to crawl into that car to get into the seat.
It's not. And here's the thing. See, it sounds weird saying it's more in the center, but we're talking more in the center by inches. We're not talking by feet. So every one of those adds a little safety to us. And the last three things, the driver in the center, the impact absorbing technology, and the roll bars and cage are more robust. Those are all things to keep us safer in these race cars. These are things we've learned from the Ryan Newman wrecks. These are things we've learned since the safer wall technology and all these things. I saw a picture of a car without the skin on it the other day, and the rear and front bumpers, Jeff, are phenomenal. They're basically giant crushable impact. It's this huge box steel that is made just to crush, that is made to slow that down. And listen, I've had 100-plus G impacts in our sport. I've had these big wrecks. I know what those feel like. It's really awesome to know. Milliseconds we're talking. When you're talking G loads and deltas and all these things, they're milliseconds. These are all big things to keep us safer in the race car all year long, to keep us running. And I like these things because, you know, look, I hit my head a lot. I think you can tell by me on this show. So I'll take any help I can get.
I think, look, anything they can do to make it safer but make it more competitive, I'm all for it.
So that's really all we got to talk about. There is a glass graphic that I'm trying to get us to avoid.
Can we skip it?
I don't want to show the last graphic, because the last graphic talks about how absolutely piss poor everybody at Gone Racing did last week in our betting pools. No, I said I wanted to skip the graphic. Skip the graphic. Oh, man.
Well, somebody, and I'm talking about myself, completely got hosed because I had Kyle Busch in two different places. So my hopes were dashed five laps into the race.
Yeah, no, let's just take that off. Let's just not talk about how we did last week. Last week was an anomaly. We've been much better lately. We don't want to talk about that. So we will come back in 2 weeks. It's the Olympic break now, guys. So Motley, me and you will be returning in a couple weeks to discuss heading up into Watkins Glen.
Watkins Glen.
So enjoy your day at Sonoma. We appreciate you guys joining us. Enjoy the Olympics, everybody. This is a great time of year, one of my favorite. I love watching the Olympics. Can't wait to see all the great athletes. And even after this, guys, remember, there's Paralympics afterwards. So really fun to watch those kids. Ton of fun. Thanks for joining us, guys. See you in 2 weeks.